Friends, happy Friday. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. And yes, Joe Biden announced his candidacy officially for president. We knew this was coming. One of the interesting things, in my view, is that Biden came out very quickly, right away, the same day he announced, yesterday, Thursday, comes out and he says, I asked Obama not to endorse me. And of course, you know, with my first reaction to it is that it probably was not an endorsement that was going to be forthcoming from Obama. I think for a host of reasons. I'll get into those in a minute. The other part of it, I thought, is what if Barack had endorsed Joe Biden, much in the same way that Biden endorsed Barack back in the day? Do you remember this? Yeah, this is back in 2007. Biden was talking. Who was he talking to? The New York Observer, and there was a voice recorder present. The journalist was taking a recording of Biden's remarks. It was all relatively innocuous until he dropped this.
I mean, you got the first sort of mainstream African American,
yeah,
who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook, man.
Yeah, I mean, I know the audio is terrible. Remind you, it's just a journalist guy, newspaper reporter who's got one of those handheld recorders, and so it's I know it's sloppy, but I'll read it to you. And mind you, this is word for word what Biden said. Quote, I mean, I'm talking about Obama. I mean, you got the first mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook, man. What do you think Obama could say about Biden? Man, this is a guy. This is the first time a set of plugs, the fake hair. I mean, you know, Obama was almost. I mean, Biden was almost bald until he had some hair restoration surgery. This is the first time a bald guy's actually looking pretty good. It's the first time a guy from Scranton. I mean, you fill in the blanks, right? And, you know, Biden was one of the people who very early on came out for Obama in the race. But then you just can't take. Can you imagine if Trump said something like this? Yeah, I know. I'll tell you what Biden was thinking, though, in the moment. He was thinking about the Reverend Jesse Jackson. That's what he's saying. First time a smart black guy is running for president. Very, very, very offensive. That had to be an awkward encounter the next time he came face to face with Jesse Jackson or Sharpton. Did Sharpton ever run? Yeah, Sharpton. There you go. Well, same point that I want to make. So that right there is what we have to look forward to. Now, before I get to the substance. And believe me, I can attack Joe Biden on substance. You got to understand, this is a guy who speaks off the cuff. He is not a teleprompter dependent candidate the way Obama was. So this is a guy that speaks off the cuff and has just said some doozies over the years. A couple of my favorites. The Walmart one, do we have that one? The Walmart, 7-Eleven? I think it's 7-Eleven. Whatever, regardless. Biden starts to opine about the type of accent you might hear at certain establishments.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not joking.
Yeah. I don't even. What was he? What? I mean, this isn't his first rodeo, right? He's been in the Senate since he was in his early 30s. So definitely an experience. It's part, people say it's part of what makes him lovable. And then, as far as endorsements go, back to why perhaps Obama is at a loss of words. Were he to give a full-throated endorsement of Joe Biden, we have this peachy beauty.
Now is the time to heed the timeless advice from Teddy Roosevelt. Speak softly and carry a big stick. End of quote. I promise you, the president has a big stick.
And he's saying it from where was it? He's in the White House. Which room? We don't know. But anyway, he's having a press conference in the White House. And I, best as I could tell, a teleprompter was actually involved in this. And that it didn't cross his mind, the double entendre there. Again, all of this, of course, dismissed by a fawning media that up until this point has given Biden a free pass. Now, in my opinion, this all ends now. It ends here and now because Biden's just not, trust me on this, he's not the guy that the left wants to see in the catbird seat. See, I think, you know, I think that as far as the anti-Trump, the best anti-Trump candidate that the Democrats have, Biden, all of this stuff actually kind of works. It's folksy. It certainly goes after one of Trump's best attributes, which is his honesty, his realness, which I think voters find very appealing. And so you got, if you put another Democrat up there on the stage, another guy who's a little bit older, a little bit frank speaking, is less managed, is less polished, I think that wears well. But this is not what the Democrats want. I promise you this. You will watch now the attacks come not from the right. Right. Trump's said that Biden's not the brightest bulb in the bunch and, you know, has made some guns. But the attacks are going to come from within. They're going to come from the left. And they it's his record. You know, I mean, Biden. Well, it's two things. It's his record, which now they're going to use. Now they're finally going to look at it. But what it really is that there's these other candidates in the race that the you know, the zealots in the Democratic Party really want. And that's just it. It's the party right now. The primary is going to be an election for the zealots on the left. And the zealots have their man. They have comrade Bernie. And Bernie, by the way, is, you know, coming into this strong from 4 years ago. I think there's no question that Bernie would have been the candidate in 2016 were the Democratic Party to have allowed him to be the candidate. And Biden can't say that, right? Biden's never emerged. He's been this is his third, I think, run. This will be his third run for president. They've all ended in catastrophe. Back in 1988, in the 88 election, Biden, I don't even remember this, we ran in the primary, and he was very promising. So this is 8 years into, at the end of Reagan's second term. George H.W. Bush is the anointed Republican candidate, successor to Ronald Reagan. And it was a wide open field on the Democratic side. Of course, you know, running against the Reagan record, tough thing. But, you know, again, very hostile media and pro-Democratic media without the advantages of the internet and talk radio just beginning in that time. So, you know, it was a wide open field. This was Biden's race to win. But he goes into it. First things first, he plagiarizes a speech. I don't know if you remember, he plagiarized a speech, a British politician, and used word for word the same lines as the Brit. And then it comes out that he had some issues in law school, apparently was accused of plagiarizing a paper and then also exaggerated his academic record. So that ended in disaster And Biden was forced to drop out of the race. Now, I guess, you know, and he was a young guy then. He was a good looking young guy. Now he's a bit older. But and I'll tell you, the party is just a different party. This is a different Democratic Party than it was back in 88, than it was in 92, than it was in 20, would it have been 20? He ran. He was 2008 when he considered running. It's just a different, it is a different party now. And the party, I think, well, there, you know, he voted against, he voted for the Defense of Marriage Act, for example. So he's voted against gay marriage before he came out for it. He voted for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He skewered Anita Hill. This is a talk of the town right now. This is coming out. This is why he had to go on The View. Today, I think he went on The View and had to grovel. I mean, if you have to start your candidacy by going on an apology tour, that's like the Amtrak to nowhere. You know, so what was it, 75? 1975, he's 32 years old, and he puts forward an anti-busing amendment to a bill. By the way, you know, this is the 70s. Civil rights movement is still a big thing. And desegregation of schools is the issue du jour. And desegregation, one of the ways of achieving desegregation, of course, was to bus students, let's say black students, into white neighborhoods in order to mix things up. And Biden, you know, vehemently argued, he's one of the few liberal voices or left-wing Democratic voices in the debate that were for or were against busing and for keeping things status quo. Listen, here's Biden, 1975, very young Biden. He's 32 years old in an NPR interview with host David Ensor. And there's also there's an exchange about the busing issue and what one side for, one side against, what they think about it, and Biden comes to full defense here of preventing busing.
Quite to the contrary, I think the concept of busing, which implicit in that concept is the question you just asked, or the statement within the question you just asked, that we are going to integrate people so that they all have the same access and they learn to grow up with one another and all the rest, is a rejection of the whole movement of black pride, is a rejection of the entire black awareness concept, where black is beautiful, black culture should be studied, and a cultural awareness of the importance of their own identity, their own individuality. And I think that's a healthy, solid proposal.
Oh, this is what it is. So the segregated neighborhoods where, well, people of color are not afforded the same opportunities as the rich white neighborhoods where the rich white kids go to school. I'm paraphrasing here so you understand what Joe's saying. It's really a matter of black pride for African Americans to stay in their communities. You tell me how this is going to play in the Democratic primary. You tell me. I mean, people, these young millennial Democrats that the party is clearly having to, I don't know, cater to on some level. I mean, they're so woke. You can't even think a thought like this anymore without being banished from our society. So I don't know how this is all going to. It took me not that long to find this. And producer Robbie quickly put this together here for our show. So this all is going to be out and about in a matter of days, and people will be talking about it. And it's not a good look for Joe. I think the greatest irony of this, of course, is that this audio exists in light of the way that Joe Biden announced his candidacy. And this is a point I have to get you to, you've got, if there's nothing else you remember. So he puts out a video. It's a slick production. It's about America. There's footage of beach landings in, I think, maybe Normandy, but the World War II archive footage. And then Biden goes into this reason for why, what really motivated him to be president or to put in his candidacy for president. When we come back, I'll play this for you. So you hear exactly his purported reasoning. And let me tell you why it's total nonsense. Sam Rejofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rejofsky, Sam Nation. All right, Joe Biden in the race. This is not unexpected news, but now it's official, and now we can have some fun with it. Now, I saw the announcement video. His team produced this kind of cutesy little video, and everything was all fine and dandy until he dropped this on us in explaining his reasons for running for president.
In August of 2017, we saw Klansmen and white supremacists and neo-Nazis come out in the open, chanting the same anti-Semitic bile heard across Europe in the 30s. And they were met by a courageous group of Americans, and a violent clash ensued. And a brave young woman lost her life. And that's when we heard the words of the President of the United States that stunned the world and shocked the conscience of this nation. He said there were, quote, some very fine people on both sides. With those words, the President of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand against it.
Liar! Right, because let's first address the Charlottesville story here. Yes, the president said this, but I've said this before in the different shows, but let me just go back to what Charlottesville was all about. The city council had back in, early 2017, I believe, had decided to remove a statue of Robert E. Lee. Now, there were a number of people in the city who were vehemently opposed to this. And they came out to protest. And they are not Nazis, and they are not bigots and racists. There are people who think, like I do, that it's a bad idea to tear down statues as political currents change. I don't like it. In fact, when Biden says this rally and these slogans are evocative of Nazi era Germany, what's evocative of Nazi era Germany are brick burnings, right? Tearing down statues. Oh, that was the previous. Oh, that is not in vogue. That book you can't read. That statue we can't look at, and so forth and so on. What's my take is put the statue up and we can all talk about whether Robert E. Lee was a good guy or not. But we got a statue that is beautiful. It was a beautiful statue, and it was in a square. It was old too. It was dedicated in 1924, so it'd been up for quite a long time. And I also I think you start removing things from history, and kids already don't know anything about history. I mean, God forbid. That's my quick thought on it. There were a number of people that were at that protest who were just normal people who don't like tearing down statues. Not bigots, not racists, not Nazis. When Trump said there were fine people on either side, what he was saying is there were people that were protesting for legitimate reasons on both sides. that there were people who were protesting nonviolently on both sides. And gone in all of this are any, of course, any references, media, any references of Antifa and other agitators who are stoking violence from the left. Right? That, but so this entire launch of Biden's is premised on a lie. But it also, and I got to tell you, this is, Biden will end up becoming a victim of the very culture his party created. And that culture, for example, the Me Too movement, where you're guilty before you're proven, you know, before you know, even proven that you're guilty, where you're a suspicion can ruin a career, an allegation can destroy a life. So Biden's got a problem there, right? He's touchy feely with women and so forth and so on. But you know, this whole black is beautiful nonsense from 1975. Black is beautiful. And no to busing, because, you know, that, I mean, it just, I'm Joe Biden. I just think that, you know, if you're dark, a person of color, you just need to stay in your own neighborhood and you're going to be fine. And what's he going to say? Well, wait a minute. I was 32 years old. I was 19. Robert E. Lee has been dead. How long? 200 years? Exactly. Biden cannot get himself out of this by claiming it was 30, 40 years ago. Not when, at the same time, we are judging things that have occurred in the far greater distant past with people that have been long dead. Yes. Yeah, no, I am. I'm going to talk about Kate Smith in this, too, because this actually ties into this very well. And if you haven't heard that controversy, that is going to boil your blood, too. Sam Rozhofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rozhofsky. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
So that there is Kate Smith singing God Bless America. If you've been ever to a Yankees game in the last 10 years, seventh inning stretch, they play that at every home game. And they stopped a couple weeks ago. Why? Well, apparently it was discovered that Kate Smith back in 1931 had made a couple of recordings that now are, of course, considered objectionable. So, you know, out with her. One of the songs was Pickaninny Heaven. And the other one, I think the title, quite obviously, you see why people don't like it. The title is That's Why Darkies Were Born. Not sure if that's going to be Joe Biden's campaign song, but we'll get comment on that later. So she sings in 1931 these two songs. They're there. They get recorded, whatever the story is. World War II happens. You know the story of Kate Smith? She's one of the most famous singers in American history. She had a very long career that spanned from the 20s to the 70s. You know, she passed in the 80s. But nonetheless, she was the voice of World War II as far as song, and raised millions of dollars, and that's in 1940s dollars, millions of dollars to fight Nazi Germany. You know, I'm telling, We have just lost our minds on this stuff. If I was a Yankees fan, which I am not, I'm an Angels fan, and thank God the Angels won last night. Way to go, Angels. But if I were a Yankees fan, I would be livid. They covered her statue up. They're going to remove it. We are losing. We are turning into the very fascists that we claim to so vehemently abhor. The left are the new fascists in all of this. This is the work of totalitarian regimes. What do you think the communists did the first thing they got into power? The first thing communists did when they got into power, well, I hate to break it to you, Bernie bros, but they took everybody's stuff. That's the first step. Yes, they did that. They're going to take, yeah, they'll take your AirPods. They're going to take your iPhone. They're going to take your Nintendo and nationalize it for the common good. So we'll see how you like them then. But anyway, they took people's stuff, and then they quickly, I mean, any references, any statues, any monuments, anything that paid tribute to any members that were now no longer politically, appropriate, were covered up, were defaced, were destroyed. You know, as a country, we're too good for this. We're just too good for it. I think people are allowed to evolve. If I can put a plug here for Joe, and not one that, not a hair plug, but just, you know, a Sam Nation plug. A lot of people, for example, that were at one point in time against gay marriage, I being one of them, who changed their mind. So you can, you know, you can pull up old recordings of people saying things and singing things. I mean, here's a woman that lived, Kate Smith, lived to be, in her, said passed away, I think she was like 78, 79 years old, sings a song when she's 20. She was born in 1907, so when did she sing these two? 1931. So she's young, right? Sings these songs. Later has an incredible career and an enormous philanthropic purpose. And an American hero. And this is how we treat her legacy. It is appalling. And I think what really just boils my blood about this Biden announcement is he cloaks himself in the fraud that is the great lie about Charlottesville, right? That Trump was morally equating, you know, people who were Nazis with people that were fighting Nazis, that there were good people on both sides, some good Nazis in the mix, which is not true. But the greater point here is that Joe Biden expects a pass. He expects to be forgiven. He expects absolution from his ridiculous positions and his racism. Yet he's running for the nomination of a party that gives no absolution, gives no quarter to people like Kate Smith, who've been dead for 30 years, but who gave enormous sacrifice for this country. And I'm just disgusted by it. And he really, this is Joe Biden in this sense is a classic Democrat because he has no shame. Sam Rzhovsky, I'll be back in just a few moments.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
They played the Kate Smith song. The Yankees played it, God Bless America, first time after September 11th. And it was George Steinbrenner, the famous, now deceased, former owner of the Yankees. Steinbrenner would never let the statue get covered up. This is always the kids, by the way. You know, it's the second generation. They come along and they are too scared of their own shadow. That reminds me of the Murdochs. You get Rupert, who is like, what, I think 135 right now. He's got a battery pack in him and basically a bionic man. on his 12th marriage and has I don't know how many kids. But anyway, the kids, his grown kids that have taken are taking over Fox and are taking over the media empire, they're all basically pussies. That's French for pussies. They are they're all libs. They're all they didn't earn it. They didn't make any of it. They didn't build it. They don't understand the sacrifice that went into it. But they've grown up with privilege. And I'll explain something else about this. If you're mystified by this, I'll tell you, there's nothing mystifying about it at all. Because Rupert grew up poor, right? Rupert's the guy who made Rupert Murdoch. He started out in Australia, Perth, Australia, hard scrabble existence. And he built it all with his hands. You know, a guy like that, I'll listen to what he has to say all day long. But now come the brats, the second generation, the kidlets who grew up with the private jets and the mega yachts. And guess what? They start feeling, go to school, you know, and they're go to school with all the rich kids, right? The rich kids all go together in their top private schools. And they sit there and they look around at each other and they, you know, and they start reading socialist literature. And they, some of their teachers, of course, are foaming at the mouth socially. They what do they feel? They feel embarrassed. They feel embarrassed about their wealth. They start thinking the same thoughts, you know, that they read in some of this crazy stuff. I know, I went through the school in the 80s. I know what kind of stuff we were reading. They start wondering, you know, I don't deserve this. We're exploiting our workers. Where does, and they start thinking this way. And then they get hooked on environmentalism. That's always that's a slippery slope to some dark emotional pathologies. There was a documentary, Robbie, there was a documentary came out, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago now, about Rich Kids, I think is that's what it was called. It was about the kids of these great families, wealthy families, and all the kids in that movie were spoiled brats who loathed the wealth that they came from. Of course, not one of them rejected the trust fund check, right? There's never a kid that says, yo, what grandpa did was so exploitative, I'm not taking his blood money. Oh, born rich. That's what it is. I like my title more. We'll go with Rich Kids, but it's Born Rich. I think you can still find it on Netflix. At any rate, great little documentary. There is a young, attractive Ivanka Trump in this documentary. And hold on, are you ready for this? Ivanka Trump is the only one in the entire documentary who's proud of her family. I need all of you to choke on that for a minute. So yeah, there's the Johnson money and all the big names in America, and the kids are all and they're useless. And so when you to my point, I mean the Steinbrenner kids I think run the Yankees now, and they're putting tarps over Kate Smith's statue because of some song from 1931. These kids are so scared of their shadow. They are so scared of any hint. Any whiff of scandal, they fold like that. And they do it because they have no moral conviction. They have no backbone. They have no pride in what their family created. And they actually bought into all this social justice theme. And they are embarrassed by it. And they want to, they're accommodators of liberalism. Yeah, we didn't have I'm telling you, it all starts with the schools. If you're a parent of children and you want your child to have a brain when they, you know, eventually turn into a grown up at like 32, I strongly recommend that you talk to them about what they're learning in school. Okay, because it's frightening. Sam Rogowski, yes, more coming right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. We were very sad, of course, to learn last Sunday, on Easter Sunday, of the violent, terrible, heinous attacks on Christian worshipers and foreigners perpetuated by Islamic terrorists. You know, this is a sad story. There was actually a Danish billionaire who was on vacation, staying at one of the hotels that was attacked. I think it was the Shangri-La Hotel. And him and his wife and one of their four children survived, and they lost three of their kids. There's another couple that lost all of their children, and countless others. It's too sad, really, to talk about. The part of the story here that really rankled me. And just so you understand, if you've listened to this program and you think I have harsh words, I think I'm pretty fair here, and I talk about things evenly. And I think one of the shows where I did that especially was after the mosque massacre in Christchurch, and I made a point, of course, to call terrorism, regardless of the ideology behind it, for what it is. But it's important to understand the ideology behind it. And my greater point was that obviously the massacre that occurred in New Zealand was the work of a white supremacist, and the massacre now here that we see in Sri Lanka is a work of Islamic militants. I mean, it's what it is. So we then hear from Hillary Clinton, who just cannot shut up. And this woman really, and speaking of Democrats having no shame, as Joe Biden does not, Hillary just cannot get off the stage. So here is her tweet Easter Sunday. On this holy weekend for many faiths, we must stand united against hatred and violence. I'm praying for everyone affected by today's horrific attacks on Easter worshipers and travelers in Sri Lanka. Easter worshipers. Does she maybe mean Christians? Let's contrast this with the tweet sent on March 15th by one Hillary Rodham Clinton talking about the New Zealand massacre. And I quote, "My heart breaks for New Zealand and the global Muslim community. We must continue to fight the perpetuation and normalization of Islamophobia and racism in all of its forms. White supremacist terrorists must be condemned by leaders everywhere. Their murderous hatred must be stopped." Again, I'm just going to read. By the way, way more people died in Sri Lanka. It's not that it matters, but numerically, if you're into numbers, Islam's dangerous. It is. Do you remember Robbie when we were on air at KBC and I actually read snippets of the Quran and they all had a meltdown? I don't know if I've ever told you. I'm reading from the damn Quran. I'm actually reading words. I'm not making any of it up. It's not any kind of anything slanderous. It's in there. Kill the non-believers. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, they wanted. No, that wouldn't have worked. They were going to send me to sensitivity training. Yeah. Yeah, no. But I mean, nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it. But we should, you know, of course. But we have no problem looking at crazy literature and, you know, the white supremacist movement and reading that and going, oh, this is insane. And it is. It's insane. It's disgusting. So the advocacy of violence eventually leads to action, to actual violence. Now, I'm all for free speech, but it needs to be called out and spoken about. And this contrast, the side-by-side tweets here by Hillary Clinton show just the extent to which it's whitewashed when it's Islamic terror, and it's absolutely put on blast when it's something else. like white supremacist terrorism. It's not right. And I think we all understand the ideology behind it. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here. Second hour of our Friday program, April the 26th. Now, I don't know if you saw this. This was a touted news story yesterday. As soon as Biden announced in a fictitious head-to-head contest between him and Trump, Biden's 8 points ahead. Okay. I mean, I know their polling, of course, is never wrong. So let's assume for a minute that that it's 100% accurate. What do you make it? See, I think that at every turn, they want to remind us that Trump is toast. They want to incept that idea. And I don't get it because I don't get it. How could they, you know, if you're wrong once, if you dismiss Trump once, as they did in 2016 throughout the race during the primary and the general election, and then have it blow up so spectacularly. Why not give the Trumpster some credit this time around? I think if you when CNN put that poll, the Biden plus 8 poll on blast, I think it's their way of saying even Biden. Those are the hidden words in there. Even Biden can beat Trump by 8 points. So I don't think that by and large Biden is the left's preferred candidate, as we I mentioned earlier. But nonetheless, this is they're making the same mistakes again. They are making, and it's not just the Mueller report. But have you noticed, by the way, that it's been a week and a day since the Mueller report came out? And what's the general feelings about this? Yeah, it's getting talked about a little bit. But the real discussion now is moving. Will the Democrats impeach? Will the House Democrats impeach? And you've got Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer getting up there and saying it's not worth it to know we won't. But then you've got Fat Jerry Nadler, who has become, I think now has taken over from Schiff as the chief inquisitor. Fat Jerry, of course, I call him that because, you know, this guy, the congressman who's going after Trump's tax returns. He used to be a really big guy. And then he got his stomach stapled, and now he's not as big of a guy. So, but, you know, Okay, so I'll tell you. So last Friday, after the program, I go out for a little date with my wife. By the way, you've got 3 kids, right? So I'm just to be honest with you, a date can be, 45 minutes at In-N-Out, and it's amazing, right? Because no kids. It was just right in between. The kids were somewhere, and we had like an hour to ourselves. And so me being the classy husband that I am, take her out for a fine meal at In-N-Out, which, what can I tell you? But we're there. We're at In-N-Out, and we're sitting by the window. This is the Irvine In-N-Out, in case you're wondering. I'm looking out the window, and I see Katie Porter, who is our congresswoman in California's 45th district. And it's funny because I had just finished the program, and I had just mentioned that my friend Ray Genoway is running against Katie Porter, and that, he's a great guy, and that we here on the program wish him well. So I just finished talking about Katie Porter and what an incompoop she is. And there, lo and behold, her ears must have been burning. So she was at In-N-Out herself. Now, I'm just going to come right out and say it. She's big. not in a healthy, like in a very unhealthy way. So I'm kind of looking at her. I'm going, oh my God, I've never seen her not in a formal, you know, outfit. And she had shorts on. It was not a good look. It was just a terrible look. And we go and get her husband. I think it's her husband. But anyway, we go up and get our meals. Our numbers were very close to each other. And we get the meal. And and here's my comment about food, right? Here's my comment about weight and healthiness and everything. It's bad enough when you're eating a cheeseburger, right? Or French fries. But when you're getting a cheeseburger in front, and then so their order, everything was covered in cheese. It was just, I know you can modify the secret menu, you know, that's at In-N-Out. You get all sorts of modifications. Producer Robbie, for example, can I disclose your secret order? It's called the Flying Dutchman, which is so disgusting. So Robbie doesn't need a carb, if his life depended on it. So he puts, it's just a patty with the cheese, and they put it on a little wax napkin for you and give you a fork, and that's a meal. And he gets really excited about that. It's disgusting. Anyway, so, but this porter had this thing. It was extra cheese, and there was like a melted cheese slice on top of the fries, and it looked like a giant, you know, cheese trough. Yeah, In-N-Out fondue. Exactly. It was melted cheese with a side of fries. Oh. You know what rankles me? Is she's in Washington arguing about and telling inner city kids, right, public school kids, what they can and can't have in their lunches. That's a big thing right now up there, that they're still dealing with the Michelle Obama stuff. Nutrition facts and everything. Practice what you preach. Anyway, all right, I digress. So Fat Jerry, one of Trump's chief inquisitors. It's going nowhere, right? It's getting shut down every turn. And by the way, right in the middle of this, we get news dropped on us this morning that Trump won the election. No, you heard me right. Trump won the election. Sam, the election isn't until I know, but U.S. GDP grows by 3.2% in the first quarter. This from CNBC this morning. Wall Street Journal reported the same. The Bureau of Economic Analysis said Friday in its initial read of the economy that the expected 2.5% growth was in fact 3.2%. So that, by the way, in economic parlance, is a huge positive difference. Expectations were moderate to low and ended up far and exceeding, and being a phenomenal, phenomenal growth here for our first quarter of 2019. Running against a strong economy, this is like flying into a headwind and wanting to beat Trump, who's miles ahead and has a tailwind. This is the challenge for Democrats, is how does a guy like Bernie Sanders, on a socialist inequality platform, get any traction when the economy's going gangbusters, when employment and underemployment are both at historic all-time lows? Black unemployment is low. Hispanic unemployment is low, right? Across the board, more women in the workplace. How do the Democrats get traction in all of this? It's not easy. And so they have a plan. You are right. They are looking for voters that perhaps don't care about employment or underemployment, or the economy is this is where the whole let's get the felons to vote for us is coming from. No, this is real. So there was a debate, and some of the top candidates, Democratic Party, got together, and there seemed to be some consensus about felons voting. Here is Bernie Sanders and what he had to say about the topic.
If somebody commits a serious crime, sexual assault, murder, they're going to be punished. They may be in jail for 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, their whole lives. That's what happens when you commit a serious crime. But I think the right to vote is inherent to our democracy. Yes, even for terrible people. I do believe that even if they are in jail, they're paying their price to society, but that should not take away their inherent American right to participate in our democracy.
Murder. Can we just acknowledge Bernie Sanders? Murder. So if you murder, you still have a right to vote. If you... I want you to appreciate what he is actually saying. And don't give me this. You, because who is it? Meghan McCain gets up there. You think terrorists, you think that the bombers... And I'm like, will you... Well, Meghan McCain, please just shut up, because you're missing the bigger point. The bigger point here is that the Democrats admit freely, by virtue of wanting to extend the vote, they want to broaden. I mean, no politician argues for a certain voting block, you know, for voting rights to expand in hopes that they get unseated or not elected. So the Democrats here are all on stage and they're all basically murder. They're all basically in agreement that murderers, rapists, terrorists would be voting for them. Yeah. Okay, on one, yeah, take that on one level. Right? But the other level of this is so tone deaf and stupid because Trump actually stole the prison reform platform from right underneath the Democratic Party, from right under the noses of the ACLU and the progressive left. Trump, and I can't even believe I'm saying this on this program, Trump and Kim Kardashian have literally taken this away from the Democratic Party. And the Democrats still stupidly are up there going, yeah, 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 felons, we want felons to vote because they're going to vote for us. Man, you peel the layers of the onion away from this and I... There are plenty of giggles to go all the way around, right? And some, of course, some truth. A lot of truth. Well, Kamala Harris had to go along. So Kamala right now has got a problem. Because when she was the attorney general here before Javier Becerra in California, she was tough on crime. I mean, she was sentencing people mercilessly left and right, whacking them senseless. Lock them up, throw away the key. And now she's got to soften her credentials. She's running in a progressive primary. The Democratic Party primaries are really, it's a progressive primary. This is why Joe is on an apology tour and why Anita Hill out there is screaming about him and how mean he was to her. During the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings is not a good thing for Joe. And this is why Bernie Sanders is talking about felons voting and why Kamala Harris is getting on the same train. Everybody is trying to catch up to where they believe the left-wing zeitgeist is. Do you think that this sells? I'm just going to ask you. No polling. You've got eyes, you've got ears, and you have friends. You have some friends, right? There's some people you work with. I don't care if you live in Orange County, California, or Orange County, Florida. I don't care if you're in Nebraska, okay, or North Hollywood. Okay, maybe North Hollywood is an exception. I'm very weird there. But my point is I don't think that felons voting is something that America is down with. Can you imagine for a minute, you know how prisons work, right? I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Generally speaking, prisons are not located in major metropolitan centers. Why? Well, they're big and they're already expensive to build, so they don't build them on prime real estate. Okay, that's a little secret I'll let you in. There's some exception to the rules, but generally they put like these big federal prisons. They put them out in the middle of nowhere in a small little town somewhere in Colorado. And, you know, you drive in through and there's a giant prison. And next to it, maybe a mile away, is a little town. but the population of the prison, the inmate population of the prison, exceeds the population of the little town by, I don't know, X-fold. So you give felons a right to vote. Now, by the way, we're talking about the federal right to vote. But now imagine the state extended the right to vote to these felons in their, they could elect, you know, Bobby B to be the mayor of the town. They could be the city council. You imagine, can you imagine the absurdity of giving felons a right to vote in areas where they are the dominant population by virtue of the location of their prison? Well, this would be a great boon to what's-his-face from Chicago. Rod Blagojevich could once again hold elected office. I know. You're saying that felons are prevented from holding elected office. That's next. Okay, that's next. Bernie's just starting with voting rights. What comes after that is allowing felons to hold elected office again. Look, this is insane. But it does, it backs up my point that the Democrats absolutely right now are catering to the fringe members of their party, that it is a progressive primary, and that they freely admit that rapists, murderers, terrorists, and whatnot would be voting for them over Trump. And on that last point, I just think it's tone deaf for the very reason that Trump has done more to reform these ridiculous long sentences some people are getting. And if most of the prison population, let's say, is, I don't know if most, but a significant portion are these crazy federal population are drug crimes. Then there's no automatic given that these people are going to vote for the Democrats. I don't think they know that, though. I think they're delusional. And in their minds, they think they are everyone's savior. Yes, I know. They, for being the Democrats, for being relatively anti-religion, do have a significant God complex. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rojofsky. Okay, friends, to put a little addition to the last segment. I do think I owe an apology here. I didn't by any way mean to associate fat people with Katie Porter. I think that was unfair of me. So anyway, you know what I think about this? I think it fits for me. Okay, I understand people have health problems and this and that, but it takes discipline to not, I mean, I gain weight the minute I start to eat. Now, there's things that I love. For example, I'm going to admit something to you. I love Cheez-Its. Now, you may think Cheez-Its are gross. I think Cheez-Its are delicious. You know what else I really, really like? I love Pringles. I don't know why. And it's so processed, right? A Pringle is there even potato in a Pringle? I don't know, but I love, and I think it kind of appeals to my OCD nature that the Pringles are all really neatly stacked in the can, and it's not just this bag. Yeah, well, they're not greasy, but you can pick them up by the edge, so you don't get it all over your fingers. Brilliant design feature, by the way. And then you can put them down on your tongue. You know that one side is salted and the other one kind of isn't, right? You can put it down on your tongue on the salted side, and it's like full flavor. It's amazing. I don't eat them. I mean, I eat them if I'm traveling somewhere and I get a little, you know, a small. But we don't keep it in the house. Because if I ate them all the time, I'd be fat. It's just a, I mean, it's a, yes. It's for me, it's not a weight thing. I have a I have all my pants, my suit pants are tailored, so they're just right for me. And if my pants begin to get tight, this is how I know. Because muscle, you know, your muscle, you work out a little bit more, you weigh a little bit more. It's not about your weight. For me personally, it's about my pant size. And if it gets too, if I start to get a little snug down there, no, I'm not carrying a big stick, according to Joe Biden. No, if I just around my waist, around my middle section, if I begin to expand, I just know I that's it. And like I mentioned, I love In-N-Out. I go maybe once a week. I, on occasion, will even skip a meal. I'm just telling you, this is a thing. It just you just have to, yeah. So yeah, I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but I really think of this, where I was going with this. The left makes everything bad that happens to you somebody else's fault. There's always some excuse that you have. Well, it's an overactive thyroid. Well, it's the white man that did it to you. Well, it's, you know, it's sexism. It's racism. It's capitalism that screwed you over. No, maybe it's that you eat too many freaking Pringles. And maybe it's because you're lazy. And maybe because the opportunity that you're waiting for, you need to go out and to hustle and get yourself. Yes. So that's what I think. At any rate, when we come back. I want to mention this Representative Ilhan Omar. Speaking of silly Congress people, she waded into another controversy, kind of inadvertently, an old tweet of hers dealing with Mogadishu and Black Hawk Down. If you haven't heard about this, let me just I'll briefly give you the rundown on this and the straight scoop. When we come back, Sam Rojofsky on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation. All right. Ilhan Omar, the Somalian-born congresswoman from Minnesota, a Democrat, in case you're wondering. Back in October of 2017, she had tweeted in response to somebody. Yeah, there's some guy on Twitter that okay, Al Franken, let's go back a little bit. So Al Franken, back when he was a senator, before he was ousted over his mistreatment of women, wrote about a terrorist attack October 15th, 2017. You'll remember there was a big terrorist attack, over 230 people died in Somalia. And basically, Franken tweeted out that he was devastated by the news of the attack, and some Twitter bozo writes, actually, the worst terrorist attack in Somalia history was the Battle of Mogadishu. 19 U.S. armed forces dead and 73 wounded. Now, look, I know what he's trying to say. He's trying to say, look, the worst thing that happened is when our soldiers who went into the country to protect U.N. peacekeepers who were there to feed and protect the Somalian population were murdered in cold blood. And it wasn't a numbers argument. It was a moralistic argument. You know, we went in there as the good guys and as Americans, right? We went there and got slaughtered. Well, Ilhan Omar, then a private citizen, wrote, in his selective memory, he forgets to also mention the thousands of Somalis killed by the American forces that day. Now, let me tell you about this, because of course, like, so this gets, this story has gotten reduced, right, to a very short So she's the one with the selective memory. She doesn't know what happened. This is an insult to our soldiers. And once again, we have a congresswoman, elected member of our government, who is putting down America. And that's, of course, what she does, right? She is doing that. And I will tell you this as an immigrant, right, as a son of immigrants, that when we came to this, my parents came to this country became their country. And, you know, in my parents' eyes, I'll tell you this really, and this is how I grew up, and it's part of the reason why I am such a diehard patriot of this country, is my parents never equivocated about America being right or wrong. Now, I'm not saying that's always the perfect approach to everything, but in my parents' eyes, having witnessed the horrors of Eastern Europe, socialism, communism, Stalinism, having realized their greatest dream to come to the freest country on earth, for them to be an idea that they would criticize the United States. Oh, they have plenty to say about politics, right? Politics is fine. But to criticize the United States, unheard of. So when I read an immigrant, any immigrant that comes and starts to talk about, oh, but, you know, never mind those 19 U.S. soldiers that were killed that day. They killed Somalis. I want to tell you what that was all about. Because as I mentioned before, you know, we were there. The U.S. military was there supporting a mission that was ordered by the United Nations. Now, I know you Democrats love the U.N. So let's just start there, right? This was not America going and stealing any oil. You know, this was not America going in on a, you know, on just a, you know, some sort of joyride to kill people of color. Okay, this was U.S. support given to a U.N. peacekeeping mission. And in this period in Somalia's history, there was enormous suffering because of an internal conflict where a number of Somalian warlords basically were fighting one another. And the losers in all of this were the Somalian people. And ironically, of all things, Ilhan Omar's family fled this cluster mess, okay, went to Kenya, and then came to the United States. There are some of the lucky ones that got out. For the rest of Somalia that stayed behind, Americans came in there to protect them. And they weren't murdered, right? The attack on U.S. soldiers that led to the events that were depicted in the movie Black Hawk Down did not happen as a consequence of, you know, freedom fighting, you know, Somalians that were just fighting the evil American oppressor. How? These were forces that were loyal to the warlords that were tearing the country apart, that the United Nations, not President Bush, not President Clinton, right? But the United Nations sent in. Now, I think the mission was terrible on a number of accounts and not anything related to what Ilhan Omar is saying. I just think it was an ill-defined mission and our forces were being used to back up the UN. I think that's actually the problem with the whole thing. But her tweet and her subsequent statements on this topic are so ignorant of the reality of what this was about. It's stunning. She is such a stupid person. I don't know. I think, you know, I hope, I have no faith that her voters in her district will get rid of her, but she is a bozo. And it's embarrassing. And it's embarrassing to all of us who are immigrants or have been born to immigrant parents, have grown up in this culture, because most of us, I'll tell you right now, would never speak this way about this country. Sam Rogowski on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Earlier today, the Wall Street Journal reported that Joe Biden's presidential campaign has raised $6.3 million in the first 24 hours. It's a lot of dough, guys. That's a lot of dough. It's more than Beto or Bernie raised in the first 24 hours of their campaigns. I'm not surprised. I expect that when we see it broken down, we'll see that there are a large number of big donors in the mix. And I'll also explain another thing what happened here is that I suspect that one of the reasons Biden was holding off on announcing was because he wanted to line up all these donations beforehand so that they're ready to go. Why? It's not really about getting the money in at a certain time. It's about being able to show that your campaign in the first day receives a vote of confidence from the donor class or from your supporters. And, you know, generally, we kind of put our money where our mouth is. So the perception is in politics that if you throw the money, if you're the candidate that announces and then immediately is flooded with cash, you're a viable candidate. So the strategy here that Biden employed was to wait to line up all the cash, announce, and then pull the trigger on it and show that they got an enormous amount right from the get-go. Jeb Bush got a lot of cash in the beginning and turned it into guacabolis, which is probably all that is of value that remained of his campaign. So we will see how all this goes. New York Times caused quite a stir this week when Thomas Friedman, Tom Friedman is a columnist for the New York Times. He goes down to the border. He's taken around by the Border Patrol, comes back, goes on Wolf Blitzer, and gives poor Wolf a heart attack. Blitzer basically says, now you say, because he wrote an article about this, and Blitzer just couldn't even believe it. He goes, now you wrote in this article, you want a high wall. You want a high wall with a big gate. You know, and that's, boy, that's, that sounds to a lot of us over here on the left, right? I'm adding the on the left part. That sounds like, to us, it sounds like Donald Trump. Here's Friedman's response.
I think you got to control the border. When you have an increase of apprehensions of illegal entries of 374% since October, obviously you've got a situation where the border security is not sufficient, and that's going to drive people who we should want to be pro-immigration against immigration. Democrats have been willing to fund more border security, okay? I'm for a high wall with a big gate, a compassionate, a smart gate, so we can keep immigration going, but you're not going to do that. Wolf, if people think people can just walk into this country, they're not going to support the immigration that we need.
Oh, my God. Oh, by the way, I agree with everything he said. Build a wall, put a gate in it. I'm not saying build a wall and not have people come into our country and immigrate into our country. Of course not. I'm going to tell you what the real story here is. This is one of the first smoke signals, signs from the left that they recognize that their insane open borders defy Trump at all odds approach ain't going to work in 2020. The key line from this is, obviously, you've got a situation where the border security is not sufficient, and this is the critical part, and that's going to drive people who we should want to be pro-immigration against immigration. That's exactly right. What he's meaning here is that we are going to lose votes as Democrats if we do not take a stand against illegal immigration. And frankly, it's crazy. What are we, 4 years after Donald Trump first began talking about building a wall? Almost 4 years from his first rally in Arizona and Nevada. We have 4 years later, and finally, we're seeing some noise from the New York Times, of all people, from the New York Times, that maybe we do need a wall. hey, by the way, Democrats, you guys, we voted for this before. Like, I know, what's the big deal? Tell you, Tom, what the big deal is you can't go along with anything. You've painted Trump into such a crazy loon racist Nazi that you can't go with him along. You can't go along with him on anything. And Trump derangement syndrome has completely eradicated any, you know, remaining logic and good judgment that your people have. And so, you know, Trump goes left, you go right. Trump goes right, you go left. You don't even know where you go. You just know you don't want to be wherever Trump is. That's not how you win elections, okay? All right, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Murjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
The Real Clear Politics average polling data for the week shows Biden plus 6.3 spread. That's above Bernie Sanders. So right now, this is just polling. I'm just informing you so you know where things stand. Number one is Biden. Number two is crazy Bernie. Number three, I can't even believe this. Kamala Harris, number three. Buttigieg, who nobody had heard of until maybe 2 weeks ago. I remember I was talking about him here on the program and said, this is a guy to watch. He's creeping up number four. And I don't know, after that, does anybody care? Booker's ahead of Klobuchar. So I don't know. Maybe that has to do with heart rate. Does somebody have more of a pulse than the other one? Elizabeth Warren, I cannot believe that the Indian is number five. Can we get that clip from Elizabeth Warren's video where Biden is endorsing her? Can we don't look at me like that, Robbie? I need clip number two.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not joking.
I don't know which Indians he meant. Not clear. I think we know, but Elizabeth Warren, number five. Beto is trailing that whole pack. So do you see how the money? I mean, Beto did the same thing. He lined up the cash. He announced he was running. Bam, the cash was there. And he's fading. This is very fluid. But I think one thing that is pretty for certain here, it would have to take some incredible event to occur. But I'm telling you that I believe that Trump's going to get reelected. If the economy is strong, if he keeps running on immigration, if the Democrats do continue with this open borders nonsense, are fighting funding the wall, and you've got the New York Times even saying, oh, you know, it's not so fast. You know, it's maybe, you know, maybe we got a problem here. Oh. The more they fight Trump, the more they're helping to reelect him. I don't know. It's too early for me to make any predictions about who's going to take the Democratic nomination. I don't know. I've said, just because Buttigieg is young, he's about Biden's age. At the time, Biden didn't think we should bus black people into white neighborhoods because of black pride. So, you know, you kind of wonder if Buttigieg is making a political career now. Think of all the things he's saying on tape that later will come back to haunt him. I don't know. It's food for thought. I'm just telling you. 40 years, big difference. I think Buttigieg will be president way before Biden ever will. But we'll see. Maybe I could be wrong. I'll follow all this, of course, as this next week unfolds and bring you the latest and greatest in all of this happenings. I know. I didn't even get to the Putin meeting. The big story that everybody, I'll tell you right now, Kim Jong-un went to Vladivostok, Russia, on board his armored train, and then rode around in his Mercedes limousine. And everybody's wondering, how the hell, in spite of this embargo, did he get this fancy German limo from Mercedes? Embargoes don't work. That's the short answer, folks. Okay? Enjoy your weekend, and thank you for joining us. I love you, and thank you for being part of this program.